Voters in Egypt head to the polls tomorrow to cast their ballots in the country's first real democratic presidential election. And according to our next guest, the results are completely up in the air. An Islamic candidate might win. After all, Islamic candidates dominated January's parliamentary elections. But a secular candidate might also come out on top. A candidate who represents the old regime of Hosni Mubarak also has a good chance, although there are no candidates representing the people in Tahrir Square who helped topple Mubarak. Journalist Thanasi Kambanis, just back from Cairo, joins us. We'll link you to his writing at herenow.org. He's in the NPR studios in New York. So, Thanasi, completely unpredictable, you say, but 13 candidates on the ballot. How many in real contention?
Well, there's two have already dropped out and thrown their support to others, and there's really five who have a fighting chance. And I'd say it's kind of appropriate that we're talking about this right after talking about a high wire act over Niagara Falls, because frankly, the Egyptian election is like 5 or 10 politicians trying to get from one bank, which was Mubarak's Egypt, to something more democratic on the other side. And there's no clear sense that they can get across it without falling down.
Right. Let's go through the contenders. You write about Mohammed Morsi of the Muslim Brotherhood. And we start there because the question many in the West have is, how Islamist are the Islamic candidates? Are they, you know, for strict Sharia law, setbacks for women and relations with Israel? So start with Mohammed Morsi. Who is he?
He is the Muslim Brotherhood's second choice candidate because their charismatic first choice got disqualified by the Elections Commission. So he's kind of a gray bureaucrat in the sort of Brotherhood's hierarchy, but he commands their incredible, formidable nationwide machine. And it's really important to remember the Muslim Brotherhood is the only political organization in Egypt that has a national get-out-the-vote machine. Its own tacticians estimate that they could churn out as many as 9 million votes, and it's something they've been doing for 60 years. So even in the years when elections weren't free and fair, the Muslim Brotherhood was driving its people down to the polls. Often they weren't allowed to vote, but they have a lot of experience doing this, and that is really their sort of dark horse strength.
Well, and is he considered moderate or more fundamentalist?
Oh, he is the most fundamentalist of the surviving viable candidates. Mm-hmm. He is a sort of fire and brimstone, old school Islamist, and he's got the sort of most hard line of the Brotherhood's religious views, and at the same time, he doesn't have their modern pragmatic economic program that their original frontrunner had.
Well, that's as opposed to another candidate who's an ex-Muslim Brotherhood member who's sort of selling himself as a bridge candidate, a liberal Islamist. Tell us about Abdelmanyam Aboulfoutouya.
Dr. Aboulfoutouya is a former Muslim brother, medical doctor, very well loved by the Muslim Brotherhood itself, and also very well loved by the bearded Salafis, who are the most fundamentalist of the Islamists in Egypt today. He has tried to sell himself as the bridge to the future, a man who can attract fundamentalist Muslims and secular liberal revolutionaries. And to some extent, he's proved that in his campaign. A lot of his volunteers are young people, secular activists who were part of the revolution in Tahrir. But he's really failed to convince the secular liberal electorate that he's not really a stalking horse for the Muslim Brotherhood or for Islamism.
Well, then you have Amir Moussa, who's a former Arab League chief who is presenting himself as a secular, sort of an elder statesman who can stand against the Islamist tide. You have Hamdine Sabahi, a former journalist. He's campaigning as a follower of the former president or the former leader of the Egyptian Revolution, President Abdel Nasser. And Ahmed Shafik, who was Mubarak's prime minister. Parse those.
Well, so this is, I know it might seem like soup to your listeners, but these are really interesting and important distinctions. So you have on the far right, the sort of worst case scenario, you have Ahmed Shafik, former Air Force general. And this is a guy who on the campaign trail has been saying, on my watch, and nobody's going to be allowed to protest. It's going to be like the good old days under Mubarak, where we don't have traffic blocked and nonsensical young people making demands of people like me who know better. And that really has appealed to the law and order constituency, the people who have have been freaked out by the instability of revolutionary Egypt. And he has the backing of the old ruling party. And it appears he has the backing of at least some of the military dictatorship. So he's the most alarming prospect. He universally alarms liberals, Islamists, revolutionaries, young people. Everybody's, except for his supporters, are kind of terrified of him. Then we have Amr Moussa, who's tried to sell himself, as you said, as a statesman. But he is viewed with a lot of mistrust because he was a Mubarak lieutenant for decades. Finally, there's Hamdine Sabahi, who is the only secular revolutionary in the race who has a fighting chance. But he's also a Nasserist. And it's worth remembering Nasser was a quite oppressive dictator who also made a hash of Egypt's economy and security. And Sabahi is a man who has nothing but admiration for Nasser. And that's something that should cause alarm for someone who's thinking about what he would do if in the unlikely event that he were elected president.
Well, wow. So it really is all over the map. We just got a couple minutes here. What do you think is going to happen? I mean, is it really that up in the air? And what are Egyptians telling you? Because we know that in the parliamentary elections, two-thirds of 27 million Egyptians who voted for Islamist parties. But several of them said that was then I would vote for a secular president.
Well, the really important thing to think about is that politics is finally happening in Egypt. So no matter how dissatisfying this pool of candidates is, and it really is a dissatisfying group, Egyptians are getting to sort out what their political preferences are. They are having a dominant voice here. And the real take-home message is that everybody, even this Ahmed Shafik fellow, have been going to the public and asking them for support and genuinely campaigning.
Ahmed Shafik, again, the right-wing, you know, Mubarak's former prime minister, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so the people are actually the most important factor in this process. And you can't begin to comprehend what a huge shift that is in an Egypt where literally for millennia, there has never been a chief executive who was accountable to the people. So no matter how badly it turns out, that's the first thing to keep in mind. The second thing is that no matter who wins, again, the real power struggle is going to be between the elected president and the military. And the military still holds all the power behind the scenes. And then finally, the sort of complex but long game here is the constitution that still hasn't even been a convention called to write it, but there's going to be a new constitution written that's going to shape this new state. And that is really going to be the cornerstone of what comes next.
But as you said, and we read in your reading, which we'll post it here now, in your writing, which we'll post it here now.org, Egyptians are very excited about this opportunity. We'll continue to follow it with you. Thanasi Kambanis, thanks so much.
Great to talk to you, Robin.